Hi, everybody. My name is Sybil Doris Adams Stratton Hart Maxwell Willis Corwin, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, that's going to be... Thank you. That's going to be... I've never felt so tall. I love this Pacific group. I haven't shown it because I haven't been here in a while. But there's never been a Wednesday night that rolled around that I didn't think about this meeting. From now on, I'm just going to call it my group. I'm going to do that because that's the way I feel about it. So why shouldn't I? I can hardly wait for this evening to come around, not because I was talking, but I wanted to get here and see so many of the friends that I haven't seen in so long. Believe me, I've missed out all the way around. I've been a little bit puny the last few months, not really terribly sick, but just not terribly well either. You know, a trifling little thing like an ulcer will keep me at home and away from a meeting. I could probably have gone, but something else comes up, and I don't go to the meeting. Well, I found out, and I knew this all the time, that regardless of the amount of time that you get sober, you will slip back into the old person that you were when you miss enough meetings. And I was miserable. I was not happy. I missed the meetings, and I didn't go. I didn't think of drinking. Thank God I didn't think about drinking. Coming up in March, I will have had 48 years of sobriety. Now, that came about because I happened to read a certain magazine on a certain day, and for once in my life, I picked up a pen and pencil and wrote them a letter asking for help. In 1940, I was visiting my mother-in-law in San Diego, and I picked up Liberty magazine. That's now defunct. I don't know how many years it has been since there's been a Liberty magazine, but I picked up that magazine, and on the cover it said Alcoholics and God. And I read that, and I was very interested in what they had to say. But do you think that I wrote them or told them or anything like that? No. I was even afraid to keep the magazine because I thought my mother-in-law might miss it and wonder why I took it. And I was just childish about it. I left the magazine there with all the news of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought about it 1,000 times and wished I had kept the magazine. Well, it was too late for that, but my time rolled around again. I got very drunk, and I got on the Ridge Route, and I went up to Fresno and even past that, and I don't know why. I have no inkling as to why I found myself way on the other side of Fresno. I remember stopping in a little town called Hanford, and there was a man there that told me that he had a daughter up in the woods there in the mountains that was an alcoholic, and so I drove by to see her, and then turned around and came back home, and on the way back, I couldn't drive. I was so drunk. I just could not make it. I didn't know what to do. And a man came along, and he put out his hand for a ride, you know. And feeling as I did, I stopped the car and let him in. And I said, "Can you drive?" And he said, "Yes, I can." And I said, "Well, you take this car and take me to Los Angeles, and I'm going to get in the back seat and forget all about it." So I crawled in the back seat and fell asleep. Now, I don't know how long that went on or how long it took that man to get over the Ridge Route, because it was a very poor road in those days. But finally, somebody shook me and woke me up and said, "Lady, we're in Los Angeles. I want to turn your car back over to you because I'm headed for Skid Row." And I thanked him for driving me there. It happened to be at Sixth and Hill. And he left me. So I went to the newsstand there at Sixth and Hill, and I picked up a magazine to read while I was taking a Turkish bath. I knew the only way that I was ever going to get well enough to get in that car and drive home and try to give them an explanation as to where I had been and what I had done. I wasn't able to hack it at all. I just simply could not face anyone at that time. So I bought this magazine and didn't look at it for a while. But after the Turkish bath, I picked it up and I looked at it. And it was the Saturday Evening Post, dated March the 1st, 1941. Well, I read that magazine and I looked at the pictures of those AA members in the Saturday Evening Post. And I was very intrigued and I was very interested. And believe it or not, I rang the bell for an attendant and had her bring the necessary ingredients for writing a letter. And I wrote that letter. But what's more important is I mailed it, which is very hard to do. And in that letter, I told them that I was a woman alcoholic and that I desperately needed help. And was there any chance that I could get help from them? And so I went on home and patched it up some way with my family. It was getting more difficult every time I turned up missing to think up a new lie. And I always dreaded going home because you had to go through so much and explain yourself. And I hated to go, but the time came when I finally did go home. And not long after that, it wasn't a very long time at all, I got a letter. And the letter was from Ruth Hawk. And she told me that I didn't have to come back to New York to find Alcoholics Anonymous, that they had a little group there in California. And she said they meet every Friday night. She said, you go down there and see them. You'll be so welcome. Because she said, you know, we've never had a woman alcoholic. So please do that. And so that's what I did. My non-alcoholic husband drove me down there to this meeting. And he'd never had a short beer in his life. He was a really fine man, but he did drive me down there to that meeting. And I was anxious to know what they did. I thought maybe they sold something, or I didn't know, I hadn't the faintest idea in the world what they might do that could help me at all. And I got off to a wrong start right from the word go, because the first thing that the leader said, and that was Frank Randall, he and Mort Joseph were the leaders of that meeting for 2 years. Nobody else got to do anything. And they were great. They were good. I never got tired of them. Some of the other people did, but I never did. And he started right off the meeting. He said, now, this is the regular meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in California. We're a band of ex-drunks who gather together to obtain and maintain our sobriety on an all-time basis with no mental reservations whatsoever. That scared me to death, because what he said was they would never drink again. And that frightened me more than I can possibly tell you, that they were there on an all-time basis and they had no mental reservations about it whatsoever. And I thought, well, I can't do that. I just can't do that. And I didn't think that I could. And then he added, now, as is our custom, before we start the meeting, the women will have to leave. Please get up and leave, and then I'll begin the meeting. And I looked around, and I was just sitting right there, and there were no other women, and so I thought, he means me. He's throwing me out. You'll never know how horribly humiliated and embarrassed I was when I got up with my head down and marched up the aisle there and on outside. It was a terrible experience to be thrown out of that meeting. I had wanted so much to be there. And so I lurked around out there and lurked around out there, and my non-alcoholic husband had driven me down. Nothing happened, and I paced back and forth in the lobby, back and forth, back and forth. And finally, those big doors opened up, and everybody flooded out. And I hunted until I found Dick, my husband, and I went up to them, and I said, did you tell them about me? Did they give you some medicine for me? Are they going to help me? Can they cure me? So please give me my medicine and let's go home. I feel terrible. I'm in bad shape. And he said, Seb, you'll never know what I've been through. He said, everybody that got up and talked looked at me. And that's all they did, was to talk about how much they drank and when they drank and where they drank it. And they all looked straight at me every time. Now, he said, why was that? And he was a really sweet man that had never had a short beer in his life. And here is the whole group down there trying to get him sobered up, I guess. And there was his wife out there in the lobby dying. I mean, I was just dying, and that's all there was to that. So I went on home and promised that I would do better and that I wouldn't get drunk again. And you know what happened? It got worse. It got worse and worse. And I was thinking yesterday about how my method of drinking was to go to a bar in the daytime and buy the first drink and then have the others buy my drinks after that. I just would not spend any money. If they didn't buy my drinks, I left and went somewhere else. And I remember getting awfully drunk, and then it was time to go home. And I was on Broadway, and I lived at 77th and Figueroa. Well, that's a long block. It's not an ordinary block. It's very long. And so I would try my best. When I left that bar, I made a little running start, and I went down that sidewalk, and I fell. And I would lay there a little bit, and then I'd get up, and I'd give it a little running start, and I'd make another 10 or 15 feet, and I would fall down, scrape my knees, and they begin to bleed. And pretty soon, I was up like that, and then I'd lay there on that cold sidewalk, and it felt good. It really felt pretty good. And I would lay there till I could get up again, and then I'd make another little running start. And you'll never know how long that took me to get home. Now, my silk hose, they didn't have nylons then, I don't think. They had fallen down long before. They had just finally, you know, just gradually. So it was that during these last hitches before I reached home, I would be running along and I would fall down, and those stockings would be in the rear of me, stretched out way in the back. And so when I would get up and make one of my little running starts, they'd be in the back of me, all filled with holes. And when I got to the porch of my house, to get up those steps with those stockings holding me back all the way was the hardest thing that I ever had to do. But I finally made it in the house, and it was a rough deal. I really had to give the biggest lie that I had ever made in my life in order to keep my home or my husband or my sanity. And I had a little girl that I adored, and here was her mama out drunk all the time. I loved her just as dearly as a mother ever loved a little girl, and I couldn't take care of her. Now, that was my life, and I didn't like that. I didn't want to behave like that. I never did. And so when I picked up the Saturday Evening Post, dated March 1941, there in that Turkish bath that I told you about, the very first thing that I saw in that magazine was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read the article, which is really strange that I would read it in such a place at such a time, as sick as I was. But they told me what to do, and that was to write them, and that they would see that I got help. And they did. They answered my letter. I say they. I'll tell you who it was. It was Ruth Hawk, Bill Wilson's secretary. She died about 2 years ago. And I loved her. I adored her. So that was the first writing, the first I could see her handwriting at this moment, saying, you don't have to come back to New York to get help with AA. You have a small group there in California, and you'll be so welcome. They will welcome you with open arms because, you see, they've never had a woman alcoholic. So please go down. Well, wasn't it a lucky thing that I did? Because when I went back down there, I was able to get in all right because the word had passed around that they'd made a mistake and that there had been a woman alcoholic there, and they made it up to me in every way that they could. But when Frank Randall finally picked up a huge stack of calls, they were 12-step calls. He said, now listen, folks, due to the recent publicity, we've got more work here than we can do. We can't possibly get this job done unless all of you volunteer and help. So he said, I'm going to call out some addresses, And then if you can go, you raise your hand and say, here, and take them, and go see those drunks tomorrow. But don't keep them waiting, because they might die. This is a killer disease. So go as quickly as you can and call on those people and tell them where we are and bring them with you next Friday. Now, he said, those of you that will do that, you come on up here. And so that's what they did. And I sat there watching, you know, and watching and watching. And that's what they did. They went up there and they got those 12-step called. And he said, I tell you what, he said, I understood from Mort over here that we have a woman alcoholic now, and that her name is Sybil. Sybil, where are you? And I raised my hand. And he said, well, come on up here, Sybil. He said, I've got a bunch of these calls, and they're from women. And he said, a woman should call on a woman, and a man call on a man. And so since these calls are for women, Sybil, I'm going to put you in charge of all the women. And I was so pleased. I thought, my God, you get promoted here in a hurry. Last week they threw me out, and now I'm in charge. And I was really pleased about that. So I took a big bunch of those calls, and I began to ring those doorbells. And I began to take those women down there, and some men. And I stayed sober. And it was not easy. It was not easy. It got easier as time went by. But I never did look back. I never had another drink. And the thing was that in those days, the leader always would say, and that was Mort Joseph, they never changed. I mean, those guys had a lock on it for years. He would always say, now then, I want you to make this call and report to me next Friday the outcome of the call. Well, that didn't seem too fair either, but nobody seemed to mind too much. So that's what I would do. But my non-alcoholic husband had gone down there with me this first night. And when he said, will all the women leave? And I left and went out in the lobby. Dick stayed. And when he came out after the meeting was over, he was shaking his head. And he said, you just have no idea what they did in there, Sib. He said it was a terrible experience. He said every guy that got up and talked looked at me as if I was a drunk. And he said, you know I've never had a drink. And he didn't like that much. Well, at any rate, I continued to go, and the first girl that I called on, her name was Irma Lavoni. And Irma came to live with me, because in those days, if you made a call on someone, you took them home with you. And they stayed for quite a spell sometimes. And that's what Irma did. And she stayed there with me, and we would make these calls on the women, and she stayed sober, and so did I, and it worked out really well for a while. But Irma got drunk, and I could not believe it. I had the childish idea. I didn't know any better. It's all right to feel like that, I think. I had the idea that if you went to Alcoholics Anonymous, you never drank again. So I couldn't understand why Irma got drunk. It was beyond my understanding. There she was. She was going to meetings with me, and Irma got drunk. And it broke my heart. And I wondered, why is she drinking? Well, I don't know, but she didn't make it for a very long time, and she went with me to call on all those women, and we became very close friends, but Irma would stay drunk. So then one time, Frank Randall said to me and to Irma, he said, I have a call on a girl up past Fresno, and it's very urgent that someone go see her and tell her about AA. They don't have a thing in the world up in that neck of the woods, not a thing. So we said we would go. Irma and I would go and see this girl. And in going, we stopped over in Hanford, a very small town, because Frank Randall had said for us to stop there and visit the guy that worked in the depot there. He said he's been coming into meetings, but he's never talked to any members of AA, and he comes a long way to the meeting, so stop and see him, which we did. And I'll never forget his response. He broke onto a big smile, and he said, do you mean to tell me that you're two live AA members, and you come way up here? He said, I can't believe it. He said, you've got to see my daughter, Clara. She is a hopeless, helpless drunk, and she just lives not too far from here. So I want you to go see her. He said, And he got on the phone and he called his wife. And he said, "Honey, you won't believe this." He said, "You know, I've been going to the meetings in Los Angeles whenever I could. But," he said, "there's two women here that say they're from Alcoholics Anonymous. Can I bring them home to lunch?" And she said, "Sure." So Irma and I went to his house for lunch. And then we went on up past Fresno to make this call that we were supposed to on this girl, Clara. Well, that was a bad experience because Clara came to the door and she said, "You're from AA, huh? I see my dad's been up to it again. Well, I've got news for you. I like to drink and I have no intentions of quitting. But I wouldn't ask you to turn around and go back to Los Angeles at this late hour. So over there is a cabin that is not occupied. Now you two can sleep there until in the morning and then go back to Los Angeles and leave me alone." We felt terrible. We just felt awful about that. So we stayed in that little cabin that night and we came on back to Los Angeles. And I think you're ahead of me on this story because guess what? It was not very long. In a very short time, Clara showed up at the meetings under her own steam, and she had decided it was time to dry up, and she did. And she never had another drink. So it wasn't too bad after all. Now, the time passed, and I stayed sober, and it's continued to pass, and I've continued to stay sober. And I thought when I came to AA, I'd never have another problem. I really did. I thought that will fix everything, that life will just be great. Nothing will ever go wrong, and I'll just be as happy as I can be forevermore now because I'm not drinking. I'm in AA, and I'm going to AA, and so nothing bad can ever happen. Well, that's just not so. Because we're human beings, we will continue to have our share of problems, but we will know exactly what to do when we have them. We'll call up our sponsor or another member, and we'll talk to them about it. But do you think I would do that when I was new? I wouldn't, because I was ashamed to let them know who I was and what I was and that I had problems like that. And so I would hug my problems to myself so that I would always be that perfect little Sybil that never has any problems. And I robbed myself of a lot of good AA, not talking to the women and telling him all those things that I could have told them that were troubling me. And so I don't advise anyone to ever behave like I did. I don't understand how I stayed sober, but I think it was made much easier for me because my brother Tex got curious about my sobriety, and he came over one day, and he said, "How come, Sib, I haven't been drinking with you at all lately? What have you been up to?" And I told him, and I said, "I've been going to the AA meetings." "Oh," he said, "that's a laugh." And I said, "Well, why don't you come with me, Tex?" And he said, "Come with you? Why should I? I'm not an alcoholic. I can take it or leave it alone, but I don't choose to let it alone. I like to drink, and that's what I intend to keep on doing. Now, sis, if you want to go down there and go to those meetings, you go right ahead, but don't ever bug me about it at all." I said, "Okay, I won't." And I didn't. But within a very short time, he was down there on his own, and he couldn't get along with them at all. He didn't like the leaders up there at the podium. They didn't like him, and he had a strong personality, and they just couldn't stand him, and I don't blame him the way that he was acting. And so he said to himself and to us, he said, "Well, I don't have to go down there to the mother group. I'll just start a group of my own." Well, I said, "You can't do that." I said, "We've got a group, and you're not supposed to go around and start another group. That, you know, that would be a bad thing for the mother group, for you to start a group." Well, he said, I can't go down there the rest of my life, and I have no intentions of doing it. He said, "I'll start a group way out here, not even close to them, and it can't hurt anything, Sib." So he started the Hole in the Ground in Huntington Park. And Tex Adams was magic, the way that he had the faculty of being able to help alcoholics. They would come there, and they'd get sober, and they'd stay sober. And he would be tough on some of them and bawl them out and carry on. He wasn't easy with them at all, but they had to do what he said, and they would do it, and they would stay sober. And my husband that I was married to then was a non-alcoholic, and he began to get very, very upset about my continuing to go to those meetings and especially spending so much time with my brother Tex. And he said, "Now, Sib, I've put up with your going to those meetings a long time." But he said, "You've got to quit going." And he said, "I will take care of you myself. If you drink, I'll just take good care of you. And you'll be back in good shape again. And then you won't have to go down there." So he said, "I don't want you to go back anymore. Because you know that I wouldn't abandon you. And you'll be in good hands. And if you continue to drink, I'll just take very, very good care of you." And I looked at him and I said, You really think that I could make it? I could drink? You don't know me at all. It would kill me. I can't do that." Well, he says, "You're going to have to if you're going to live with me, because as it is, you're never home. You haven't been home since you and your brother started in AA, and I'm not going to put up with it any longer." So he said, "You better think about it. You just better think about it." So I did. I thought about it, and I moved out. And I moved out. I went down to West Adams Street. There's a row of old houses down there, possibly 100 or more years old. And I rented one of those rooms. And I lived there and got a job on the Times newspaper. And I made it. I worked okay. And I'm glad that I did that. I had that experience of having to leave a perfectly good man who was kind and good and had adopted my little girl. But I had to do something. If I had gone back to drinking, I would have been dead many years ago. So it was hard, but it was something that I had to do. And since then, I've found that there are lots of things that can happen in a person's life, and it gets pretty tough at times. But never does it get rough enough that a drink would solve it. I think what a terrible thing it would be. I was 80 years old last May. What a terrible thing it would be now, past 80, if I went back to drinking. And it would kill me almost at once, I'm sure, because I'm not as young as I was when I stopped. So what do you think would happen to me? And especially with my experience in AA, I would be in a bar drinking and my thoughts would turn to Clancy and my thoughts would turn to you and to Matt and some of the women here. And I'd know where I was supposed to be and I wouldn't be there. I would be in a bar drunk. No, I would rather be dead than to think, even consider or talk about such a thing. Now, that's because I love AA, and I don't want to drink, and I'm very glad that my life has been as good as it has been. I'm so lucky I'm married to another alcoholic. A lot of times they say that won't work, but I want to tell you, when you marry a guy like Bob Corbin, who is so enthused about Alcoholics Anonymous that he would rather be here than any place on earth, as would I, and we love AA so much, and we have so much to talk about. He will go and talk somewhere, and then when he comes home, we'll talk about it. And then I'll go someplace and talk, and when I come home, we'll talk about it. And that's the general subject around our house, is Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a little baby, as I told you. She grew up, became an alcoholic, and got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous about 8 or 9 years ago. And I love her very, very dearly. She loves AA, and she's a beautiful lady. And she's had 5 kids, and there's 3 out of those 5 that are either on drugs or on alcohol. And I don't mean to say that it's catching or anything like that. That's just it's just the way that it turned out with her. Now, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to tell you something. I believe at least 2 people told me tonight that any night I wanted to come to the Pacific Group, which would be every Wednesday, and I couldn't possibly do that every Wednesday, to let them know, and they would come and get me and drive me here. Now, that's a good offer. So you're going to be seeing a lot of me, and I'm going to be seeing a lot of you, and I want to thank you very much for listening to me tonight. Thank you.